Hello and welcome to Series 3 and Episode 8 of the Poolside Pass podcast. On today's episode, we're not going to be speaking about those traditional coaching topics that we've spoken about previously in the series with the likes of Eddie Reese, Terry McKeever, etc. Instead, we're going to be speaking about mental health in sport, how we as coaches can help athletes support their mental health, but also how we can look after ourselves and stop ourselves falling down that slippery slope towards poor mental health. I'm delighted today to be joined by Sophie Dodd, the founder and CEO of Mental Health in Sport, and she's going to be talking to us about her experiences with mental health in sport, but also a few practical tips and resources for us coaches to help us on our journey. Okay, so I think it's about time I introduce Sophie to the podcast. Sophie, welcome. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, you're very welcome. I think this is a topic that is super important now more than ever, I guess, in terms of being in the middle of a pandemic. Why don't we just start kind of away from topic almost a little bit, get your kind of background within sport and how you got into starting up your company in mental health and sport.
Yeah, so I'm a swimmer. I still swim. And yeah, as a kid, I just took to swimming over other sports. I wasn't a fan of running, wasn't a fan of like gymnastics. I was very much swimming as my sport. So I think growing up, it was amazing to kind of work my way up through the sport. And I learned a lot. I met a lot of people through it. And it was just an incredible journey. And I started out in a smaller club and then I moved to a slightly bigger club. But that move meant that I had to drive quite a distance. It was like 50, 45 minutes to training every day, which obviously took its toll more so on my parents than me, because I could have a little snooze. Yeah, it was an amazing, I wouldn't change that move because I learned so much from it. And I think that around about that time, you know, you start having like exams, you start like having to actually think about what you want to do in your life. And I started to, my identity was very much in swimming. And at the time, I had a coach who was very much for pushing me. And I think that the way that they went around it didn't necessarily help me. I don't think they went out of their way to like make me feel rubbish about myself. But yeah, I definitely think that it would be really interesting to see how I would be now with that coach. But I think that coaching clash kind of in personalities led to a lot of struggles with performance anxiety and obviously my racing. And so, yeah, every time I was always the hardest worker in the pool, and that's never really changed. But when it came to racing, I just kind of fell apart. And I started to really put a lot of pressure on myself. And I think a lot of athletes are probably the same, like they put a lot of pressure on themselves. And I started to really, really struggle with performance anxiety. And around about the time that I started to do GCSEs and A-levels, I started to actually get really anxious about exams as well. Because my approach to schoolwork was very much similar to training. Like I saw revision as training for the race. So the exam was like the race. Yeah. So I think that a lot of the performance anxiety that I had in the pool kind of dripped into that. And then I eventually started struggling more and more. It kind of dripped into just daily life. And I started to really struggle with panic attacks and just general anxiety. Everything I did, I was so worried about different outcomes that are just so irrational. And then I started to work with a performance psychologist to help me with those problems. And then as I was working with that performance psychologist, that anxiety got lesser and lesser. Less is not a word, but we're going with it. and then, but those problems started to get like diminished. And then I realized that I'd been left with depression. So I think that a lot of the fact that I put my identity in sport led to me kind of thinking that if I didn't swim a PB or if I didn't swim a good race, then it was a reflection of me as a person, which is totally ridiculous, but so many athletes go through it. And so I really was left with a lot of depression. And so, yeah, I then had a new coach, and he encouraged me to kind of work like around that, because he just saw that there was no way I was going to be able to swim well if like I just wasn't well in myself. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's been a bit of a whirlwind since then. I went on antidepressants when I was 16 or 17, and I'm now off antidepressants. But I think that new coach that I got, the way that coaches have to, like, they're always there for their athletes, like always, yeah. They're always like available. And there's no space for a coach to like have their own time. And I just think that so through obviously my different coaching experiences with other coaches, I think that it's definitely made me realize how like little training that coaches get. And so I wanted to kind of tying that into the company that I run now. From those struggles, I very much wanted to change the world of swimming. Because I seen that my coaches had to help me with no training. And that must have been very daunting from a coach's point of view. You know, if you've got a swimmer coming to you and basically saying, I don't want to live anymore, like that must be so hard.
Yeah.
And especially with no training or no understanding. And this particular coach, it was his first coaching role. And I think he definitely said the right things, but it could so easily have gone the opposite way, you know?
Yeah.
My heart just goes out to so many coaches who are having to help their athletes, and now more than ever with the pandemic. So I think I wanted to change the world of swimming for good. But then obviously I moved to university and I study at University of Stirling. So there's so many different sports people that I meet on a day-to-day basis. Well, usually meet when I'm actually in person.
Yeah.
Cause I'll just talk to anyone. Like that's my problem. I just talk to anyone. And I started to realize that it wasn't just a swimming problem. It was other sports that have that problem. Mm-hmm. With that stigma. So that's where mental health in sport kind of started. It's a really original name.
It does what it says on the tin, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like you're not buying a tin of beans and getting, I don't know, tomato ketchup. I don't know where I went with that, but yeah, like I think that because I started talking to more and more athletes, I realized that it wasn't just swimming that had that problem. And so I started with a YouTube campaign. It wasn't meant to be a company to begin with. It was just supposed to be a YouTube campaign. And those YouTube videos are still on there and you can get them through the website. But I kind of just wanted to sit athletes down and discuss mental health, the good and the bad. So there's athletes who spoke about how sport had changed their mental health for the better. And then there was also athletes who spoke about how like they'd struggled as a result of sport. And I think that it was important to have the two sides. But yeah, it just kind of grew. And then without even realizing, I was looking into whether or not to turn it into a charity. And then I ended up going down the community interest company line, which is just a little bit easier in terms of like the legal side of things. Yeah. So it basically is a charity, but it's just got that company label. And yeah, that's how it kind of grew and kind of snowballed, I guess.
So yeah, that's a really kind of nice story and a really nice story. Obviously, it wasn't nice for you when you were going through that, but you can really see the pathway there from how your experiences and how that shaped, you know, what you're doing now. You know, in your work with your company, what would you say are the common mental health issues that we see within sport?
I think that sport is just a very pressurized environment, and I don't think you could ever change that because that's what makes sport so amazing. But it's learning how to adapt with that And I don't think there's any one specific mental health issue or illness that is the most common, because I think it fluctuates from sport to sport as well. So for example, gymnasts, there might be more common, it might be more common to find eating disorders in a gymnastic environment just because there is so much emphasis on weight. but I think that generally the anxiety and the identity crisis, I guess, very quickly manifests itself in a sporting environment if it's not looked into from an early age. And I think that that's the most important thing to kind of look at, really. And I think that it kind of baffles me how common mental illness and mental ill health is in sport. There was a 2018 study that basically, I think it was something like 50% of athletes showed signs of mental illness. Wow. Which is just crazy.
Yeah.
And my first instinct was like, that's a lot. But then once I pondered it, I was like, actually, that doesn't surprise me because of how pressurized.
Right.
It really isn't like surprising, I guess, because of the way that sport is.
I guess when you think about it, right, you said, you know, there is pressure in sport, whether it's external pressure, whether it's internal pressure, you know, athletes put on themselves. When you put yourself or when you put under levels of stress like that, if there is anything, you know, if you are predisposed to showing, you know, certain things, you know, when you put under pressure, you're creating a perfect environment for it to come to the fore.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And I think that, like, there's so many athletes now that are coming out about mental illness. And I think that's great, but a lot of them tend to be after they've retired, which to me still suggests a big stigma. For example, the best example I can think in the swimming world is Michael Jameson. Mm-hmm. And he obviously opened up, but it was after, like, obviously I'm not bashing the fact that he opened up because I know how hard that is. And I think that it was amazing for the sporting world, but also for the mental health kind of stigma. But I think that it's very common to open up about it afterwards. Mm. And it does make you wonder, would that be the same if it was like a physical injury? You know, when he had the heart palpitations, that was straight in swim so quickly after it happened. And it does just make you think, like, is there still that stigma just because it is always after they've retired?
I think there's definitely still a stigma around it, right? Because it's still seen, I think, as, you know, a sign of weakness, I guess. Mm-hmm. And especially in men. And when you're trying to be training, you know, when you're trying to put on this image of you're a strong athlete, you know, there's still a lot of stigma attached to, well, how can you be an athlete performing at a top level and have these problems that you're dealing with as well? There is a lot of stigma around that.
Yeah.
That's something that, you know, as a community within sport, is something I think we need to deal with.
100%. I 100% agree with you on that one. Yeah, I guess it's really sad. I think it is getting better, don't get me wrong. I'm not going to say like it's awful, but I think that it definitely still needs a lot of work.
You touched on it earlier in your intro. You know, we said just now as well that mental health awareness is improving, and it has really improved a lot in the last few years. You know, 5-10 years ago, we wouldn't be having this kind of discussion.
No, yeah.
So it's, you know, it showed the progress is that we're having these kind of discussions now, and that, you know, people are going to listen to this and perhaps have further discussions after that. But how important is it that coaches are trained to spot signs of, you know, mental illness within people that they work with? Maybe not just athletes they work with, but other coaches that they work with as well. How important is that for coaches?
It's so important, because if you're not physically and mentally well, how are you expecting an athlete to swim well? Or how are you expecting a coach to perform well and give their athlete what they should be and can be delivering? And I think that this is one of my biggest things that I think needs to change, is the way that people are trained around mental health in sport. And I think that obviously I mean, every coach goes through level one, level two, level three, whatever. And it's different in different sports. They have different like ways of calling it. But I think if you're looking at a swimming context, level one, you don't cover anything to do with mental health. Level two, there is a little bit, maybe a little bit of sports psychology, not a lot. Level three is only really when you start to like look into sports psychology. And obviously coaches aren't going to be sports psychologists, but it's still having that ownership of like being able to recognize those, recognizing those tendencies in an athlete. Like if someone's having a bad day, just ask them if they're all right. And I think that one of the podcasts, maybe it was Ben Higson, he actually said about that. And I think that, sorry, I just did a plug for you there. but I actually used to swim with Ben, not with him. He was my coach because I used to train at Dumfries. And I think that that's one of the things that coaches just need to do more of, like just ask people how. And I think that swimmers or people in general are very good at being like, yeah, I'm fine. Like it's just become a passing thing now. It's like, oh, you're right, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, fine, how are you, kind of thing. But you don't actually stop to think, actually, how am I or how are you? And I think it's just developing that sort of community as well in a club.
Also as well, I think, you know, you just said that no one really stops to think actually how are they. I think as well, if you've got something good on, if you're not having a particularly great day and someone says how you're doing, you know they're expecting someone to say, oh yeah, I'm fine. That's the that's the societal norm for how that conversation goes.
Definitely.
You're standing there thinking, well, you don't really want to hear about how bad my day's been, so I'll just tell you it's been okay. And that's kind of how it goes round and round then from that, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I 100% agree with you as well. And I think that, you know, it's not just a swimming world problem, but I think that if you look at a small community and try and change that, then it's easier to change than a massive problem.
Yeah.
And why can't swimming be the first community to like actually change that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I agree with what you were saying a minute ago with in coach education, you should be required to do certain, like almost like little modules on mental health first aid. So how can you support better mental health within the people that you're working with? I think that would be a positive addition to qualification.
I think also if you look at a swimming context as well, like swimming, most coaches have some sort of an awareness of lifeguarding skills or physical first aid skills, but how many of them would actually know how to combat in terms of a mental health first aid role? And I think that that's one of my biggest goals, is to have like as many coaches as possible trained in either mental health first aid, like have the accreditation, or in like just a general knowledge, because the mental health first aid course is amazing, but it doesn't put it into a context in terms of swimming. So then you have to think about that, you know. So I think just 1 hour of your day, like looking into how can I actually maybe prevent suicide, or how can I look at the signs of suicide, or self-harm. Like self-harm in sport is so misunderstood, because like it's kind of bred into sport, you know, like the way that you push yourself to that point. And I know that I used to push myself in training so much that I'd throw up. And then it's finding that balance, you know, of is that normal? Should that actually be happening? Probably not. It's finding that balance below that. So I think that, I definitely think coaches need more training than what they're getting.
I think you raised a really good point there, is that, you know, a lot of coaches, and for a lot of coaching jobs, it's a requirement that they have either a rescue award or a lifeguard qualification as well, in case they need to save someone's life at training. And when you look at mental health and the mental health first aid, again, that can be life-saving stuff in itself, because if you go on to prevent someone from, you know, committing suicide, you've essentially helped save their life. So we're not holding that in as much importance, because a lot of mental health is invisible, right?
I think also in terms of a preventative measure, like sometimes I would go into training and my coach would like see that I wasn't right, mentally that I was a bit vacant. And he'd like pull me to the side and we'd sit and chat. And I got so much more out of that than if I'd have actually done the session.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes there is so much attention put on performance that is kind of the well-being is a bit lost, you know, like swimming is only a small part of your life. Unless you are probably like me and will probably just keep going and just end up joining masters and stuff. But like swimming is only a segment of your life and who you are. And I think that that's definitely lost in translation, I guess.
I think I saw a clip on a little video clip on Twitter the other day. And it was actually quite apt to this conversation is when we're coaching, we've got to remember we're dealing with people who play our sport or who swim.
Mm.
We're not just dealing with a swimmer. We're dealing with people who happen to be good at swimming. Yeah. You've got to always look after the person as well, right?
Yeah, definitely. 100%.
So what training or resources are there available right now to help coaches with this kind of stuff? Because we've said about how important it is that, you know, coaches build awareness or train and get skills to help with it. What training or resources are available for coaches to do that?
So there's always mental health first aid training in Scotland. It's Scotland's mental health first aid training. And in England, I think it's just mental health first aid training. And that is probably the easiest thing to just go to. But there's always other ways of getting understanding and awareness. Even just an hour seminar, like through my company, I deliver seminars, sharing my experience, sharing my bits of knowledge. And I'm not a psychologist in any way. I'm just sharing my experiences. And I think sometimes you can learn a lot from having someone with experiences. And I think sometimes it's great to know the practical sides of things, but if you can't put it into a situation, then it's pointless. It's like knowing how to bake a cake and actually being able to bake a cake. Yeah. And I think a lot of people have been learning how to bake cakes in lockdown, but I think that I would always say mental health first aid training is like amazing. And it can be quite difficult to actually get on those courses. And this is my biggest thing that I definitely want to change is the fact that a coach shouldn't have to do their own looking around for a mental health first aid course or for mental health training. And it should almost just be offered to them, you know, like British Swimming offer so many CPD opportunities to their coaches. Why can't mental health? And I'm sure that they probably do little bits and bobs, but to me, it's probably just a tick box kind of job.
When I think about all the things that I have to do, because I'm a swimming coach, all the certificates I have to have to enable me to do my job, I have to get a DBS and I have to do the safeguarding and children course. And they need to be renewed every few years.
Mm.
Why is it that we're not requiring people to have mental health first aid training to be able to do the job? I think it's
exactly
that people need to look into.
Yeah. You just totally just summed it up in one. But it's so true. Like it shouldn't be on the coach to have to look out for a mental health first aid course or like try and find where to get one. It should just be like, here's an opportunity. If you want to take it, then take it. Or it should actually probably be required. Because I think that a lot of the times that mental illness is crossed with mental health, and like you don't cross physical illness with physical health. Like everybody has physical health bad days. Sometimes you wake up with a sniffle and sometimes you don't.
Yeah.
Whereas like it's the same with mental health. Mental health is totally different to mental illness. Mental illness is a side effect of poor mental health.
Right.
And I think that it's so important that coaches can understand that. And I don't think that they actually have been given the tools in the toolbox to actually be able to know that.
I think it's important to remember that like everyone has mental health. Like you said, everyone has mental health. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. Not everyone has a mental illness, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's a really important point to hit home with coaches.
Yeah, 100%.
So on the flip side, you know, it's not just athletes, I guess, that can suffer from poor mental health that then might lead to mental illness. You know, there's plenty of coaches that have suffered with poor mental health. What is it that coaches should look out for in themselves that might signal that they're on a slippery slope to leading to poor mental health? And I'm thinking, you know, things typically as a coach that might come up, things like, you know, the stress of it, you know, not being able to switch off, all that kind of stuff. What should we be looking out for as coaches within ourselves so that we don't end up on that slippery slope?
Yeah, for sure. And I think that you've just hit the nail on the head there, that, you know, like, you should be like checking in on yourself daily. How do I feel today is like the easiest question to ask yourself. And if it's a bit rubbish today, then that's okay. But I think that the major things to look out for are just a change in mood. And like, you'll know if you're just feeling a little bit like cloudy today, or if the sun's shining in your head. Like, that's just the easiest way that I like to like word it. But in terms of more direct things that I would look out for would be mood changes. I feel like that's such an obvious one, but we forget it all the time. But not just like in terms of mood, in terms of the way that you approach situations. If you have like a meeting and you're just like, oh, I can't be bothered. Sometimes you might just be overtired. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that if you just can't be bothered, then like you might like be on a slippery slope to mental illness. But like if you are like withdrawing from situations, if you're finding it a chore to speak to people, if your appetite's changing in any way, sleep changes are another easy one to notice. And I think that so many people have Apple Watches now that they register them. And I know for a fact that if I get less than 9 hours sleep, then I'm just a miserable person to be around.
Wow.
Oh yeah, 9 hours. I have to have a solid, maybe 8.5, I could push it. But see, if it's under 8.5 hours, like, you just don't want to be around me. But then sometimes there's reasons for like struggling to sleep. And I think that it's just so important about just like being aware. And I think that coaches, I think for a coach, it's probably even harder for a swimmer than a swimmer, because a swimmer can go home from the pool, whereas a coach is always getting messages from their athletes, or always having to plan a session. I think that as athletes, we actually forget that coaches are people too. And to any athlete listening in, just ask your coach how they are. Like, throughout this lockdown, I've constantly been messaging my coach being like, how are you? Because it shouldn't be on him to message me all the time. And I think that that's something that, you know, it should be put across, because it's so easy to forget that people are people. I think that just in terms of the warning signs is just general disconnectedness. And obviously now more than ever, like, it's easy to get disconnected. It's easy to get distracted. It's easy to isolate yourself. So I think that, yeah, those are the general warning signs, but it's different for everyone. You know, like, some people might struggle with food. Some people might not. Some people might not be able to sleep at night. And then some people might be like dead to the world. So I think it's learning about your own warning signs that you maybe need a day off, or you maybe need a bit of a day to yourself kind of thing.
Yeah. Cool. So in terms of coaches and being able to, you kind of touched on it there. What are some of the easy to implement practical steps or practical tips for coaches to help them manage their mental health? And I think you just touched on it a little bit there, but are there any kind of real key things that we can do as coaches to help us keep those bad days at bay?
I think that there's so many different daily habits that you can actually implement that actually benefit your mental health. I think for me, I would say write a gratitude list at the end of the day, or even in the morning, like when you wake up, what are you grateful for? Like, just name three things. And the more that you do that, the more you train your brain to actually be like, oh, actually, I'm quite grateful for like my safety or my health right now. Yeah. And I think that it's just so important to actually value yourself as a person, not as a coach or a swimmer or a runner or whatever, like just value yourself for you. And like, there's so many people that speak, the way that they speak to themselves is, and they would never speak to them, to a friend that way, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's just the way that you treat yourself. If you need a day off, then have a day off and go for a hill walk or go walk your dog or go sit in front of the TV if that's your thing. Like, I think that we live in such a like hustle society now that it's almost discouraged to take a day off. And like, sometimes you just need a day where like you don't speak to anybody. So I would say that obviously it's different for everyone in terms of finding techniques to kind of combat that. But I would definitely recommend like gratitudes and the way that you treat yourself and speak to yourself and taking note of like the thoughts that you're actually thinking. Because it can be so like, it can be so damaging, but also so beneficial at the same time. Like if you made a good lunch today, then be like, I did a good job. Like, don't be calling yourself Gordon Ramsay, but like, you know, like give yourself the credit. And I think that sometimes we can forget to do that. Yeah. Especially in a sporting world, like coaches are no different, that they're always looking for better. Like my athletes did great today, but like, what can we do now? You know, and I think that as a sport, like that's important to have as an athlete and a coach, but sometimes like just take the time to celebrate what you've achieved, you know?
Yeah, I think that's really important. Finally, that's the final thing on my list, actually. We've rocketed through our conversation, which means the conversation flowed quite well. Finally, you know, at the time of recording, we're in the middle of another lockdown in the UK. And hopefully now we're moving towards returning to a more normal life at some point this year. And we're looking forward to hopefully, you know, unlocking some of these restrictions. What should people be aware with regards to, you know, looking after themselves as we're returning to maybe returning back to training or just returning back to slightly more normal life? Because we've spent so long out of normality. So what do we need to be looking out for with this?
I actually had a conversation about this with my friend the other day that I think that it's going to be, we were just discussing that we think it's going to be a big shock to our systems actually meeting with people in the flesh. And I think that it's definitely important to maybe take an easy way back in, you know, like after I'm going to put it in a swimming context because that's just what I do, and it's quite handy that it's a swimming podcast. So yeah. So if you were like, if you had like your break at the end of the season and then you went back to training, you wouldn't just go back into like threshold sets and like absolutely killing yourself. You would ease back into it. So I think that it's important to do that when we do hopefully eventually return to some sort of normality, is like ease back into it. Don't be like filling up your diary with like, I'm gonna meet Bob on this time, and then I've got John, and then I've got so and so. Like, just kind of ease back into it. And I think that, you know, it's okay to be a bit overwhelmed by that, because it's been a massive adaptation to actually get used to sitting in front of a computer all day and like being on Zoom calls all day, you know. And I think it'll take people quite a while to adjust back to reality, I guess, of the real world. But yeah. I think just allow yourself the time, you know, like don't rush it. There's no need to rush anything. And yeah, I think that it'll be so important to kind of just ease into things, because I think that especially in the sporting world, it can be very much like, yes, we can race again, like, you know, and it's like, yes, when can we train? When can we do this? But I think just easing in. I think the best way that I can relate to this is I had glandular fever in 2019. And so when I came back, I was like, yes, I can train again. Like, I'm in the pool. And before I knew it, I was burnt out again.
Yeah.
Because I just rushed back, and I got tonsillitis because my immune system was just like, nah. So I think, like, just ease back in, and that's okay. Like, there's no rush. And in the grand scheme of things, like, just enjoy being back in the pool.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. I like the one thing, the first two times my swimmers returned to the pool, and we've got to do another return soon. But the first two times, you know, my first few weeks of training was all about just enjoying being back in the water, because it's been so long for a lot of these guys since they've been in the water. So, like, just enjoying the feeling of being in the water and getting connected with it again, I think is really important.
Yeah, I think one of the first things that I will do is put my snorkel on and just scull and, like, keep my head in and just look at the tiles. I just think that sounds so sad, but I will just be like, yes.
Yeah. Cool. So we're kind of at the summary section now for the episode, and we always ask our guests to kind of sum up their topic in three kind of key points. So what would be your top three tips, Sophie, for looking after mental health?
I think that number one, I would say acknowledge your thoughts and be aware of your thoughts, and treat yourself nicely, would be my first point. I think my second one, I would definitely say that just it's okay to not, like, it's so cliche and everybody says it, but it is okay not to be okay. Like, everybody has a bad day. Like, the other day I had a bad day. Doesn't mean I'm, like, going to be back on antidepressants anytime soon, but, like, it's okay to have a bad day. And I think that that's something that I've massively learned. And I think my third point is that just remember that everyone's human. And whether that's as a swimmer treating their teammates, or whether that's a swimmer treating their coach, or whether that's a coach treating their swimmers, or a coach treating their fellow coaches, like, everybody's human, and, like, people have bad days, you know. And that's okay. But yeah, that would be my three sum up points.
Excellent, great. So if people that have listened to this podcast, and, you know, hopefully they've got all the way to the end, hopefully they've enjoyed the podcast, if they want to kind of find out more about what you and your company do, or if they want to, you know, potentially look into some of the courses that you run, where can they find out more information about the work that you're doing?
Yeah, so Instagram, Mental Health and Sports CIC, Facebook, Mental Health and Sports CIC, and then the website is mentalhealthandsportscic.com. But usually if you find the Instagram or the Facebook, then there's a link to that. But yeah.
Cool, great. So, you know, thank you very much for your time. You know, I actually really enjoyed this discussion. It's probably one of my favorite ones so far to record. I don't know, I've done quite a few podcasts already, because I just think the conversation flowed nicely, and it was a good little discussion topic and quite topical for where we're at this point in time. So thank you very much for coming on and recording with me.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. I want to thank the listeners as well for tuning in again. Hope you enjoyed the episode, and it's given you something to think about as we move towards returning to the pool. Maybe you're going to try and book some of your coaches onto a mental health first aid course. If you like this podcast and you'd like some of the other ones we've done as well, why not share them within your coaching network? Also, stay connected with us. We're on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, all at The Poolside Pass. And of course, our website, www.thepoolsidepass.com. And until next time, take care.